Guy is. And I think it's strange, though. I think the same thing in Iran. We had a person, the Shah's on our side, and we said we'd support him. Then the press started going on about how bad he was. Then the president dumped him, and now we got some guy who's, we can't consider him our friend, but he's in control now. That Khomeini, I can't pronounce his name right. I guess that's certain things you could talk about.
So you're wary of the press. Now, let me ask you. Do you feel that, but let me ask you a specific question. Have you ever known a reporter?
What'd you say?
Have you ever known any reporters or personally anybody who worked for a newspaper?
I haven't known. I've corresponded with a couple, but I haven't known any personally.
What do you feel? Why would they slant or misreport?
I don't think it's anything on purpose. I just think it's their, I think most reporters are liberal. There's a few exceptions, like I think Braystrup's pretty accurate. But most of them just, they report it the way they see what they see, but they had their own ideas to stick in. I just think that's about what I think.
Well, you say liberal. What do you mean by liberal?
It's hard to define, but I think most of them are that, the do-gooders and humanitarians. I don't think they see things accurately or in perspective with the rest of history. Like in Vietnam, they act like it was the only war where people died. It was just, I guess you put it that way.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that, in terms of lessons, this is getting off the personal thing, but it's logically follows from what we've been talking about. Should there have been some sort of official censorship of news?
I don't know if it should
as
be
there
that.
Had been in World War II.
I think there should have been some, yeah. I think some things just...
What would be the justification for censorship?
I think saving lives is mostly. Because when you... I'm not for totally, you know, stamping out and saying you can't report on this, you can't report on that. But I think there should have been something because some things just totally hurt morale and such. I'm not really too strong in either way on that. I really don't know the facts totally about that.
Well, how would censorship help save lives?
Well, see, like I said, I'm not really positive, but, I think it hurts, some of the things I report hurt morale. And, like, okay, one thing, the press gave a lot of support, I think, especially during Tet to the Enemy. And, of course, this was used by the communist propaganda, and that gave strength to the enemy, and in a way, that could bring about American deaths. I think that's one thing you could say. Specifically, I think giving support to the enemy helps them with their morale and helps it hurts us.
Okay. It is true that we found a North Vietnamese pamphlet about Khe Sanh that used Newsweek photographs and illustrated.
Oh, I saw this one thing was I can't remember the name of some communist propaganda in Vietnam. I think it was an English book, English written. And the whole report about the Laos invasion was an excerpt from Life magazine saying about how we screwed it up. And I think if American press is writing like that, the communists can just take it and print it in their magazines, it must be something wrong with it.
Okay, has your research affected your own career choice?
Yeah, I think so.
Could you say something about...
Well, right now I'm hoping, praying to get into the Marine Corps as an officer for a career. That's what I'm planning for. And I guess it's a lot due to this research because I think it's I want to know what it's like mostly.
Okay, could you? I know it's hard because this is something that you're looking forward to rather than something you've done.
Right.
But what is there about the research you've done and how has that created an appetite for this particular career choice?
Well, I think it's one thing for me to sit here and talk about it than actually have done it, and I want to, like I said, see exactly what it really was like. And also, I think, like I said, the Marine got a lot of tradition, which I like, and they got the esprit de corps, which I think is important, so. Right now, that's what I'm hoping to do. If I get in there and I don't like it, I'm not going to stay in there, you know. Just because when I was a kid, I wanted to, but right now, that's what I'm hoping to do.
Okay, well, what are some of the things that the people you've met and read about, what that they did, that, or that they exemplified, or that they represented, that you would like to emulate or to imitate?
Well, I haven't really done anything that I can talk about, so that's mostly I want to say, to be able to say that I actually did something and rather just sit here and talk about it. That's mostly it. I think the guys acted in the people over Vietnam acted, I guess you can say, in the best traditions of the service, like they say in citations. And I think I'd like to do something like that if I could.
Well, I know this is to say hard to get at, but is it because it's something you want to prove yourself, or do you want to do your duty to a higher cause? What exactly did these men do that you want to?
It's a little bit of all of it. Like, I want to see if I could do it. That's one thing. Also, I think it's service to this country, which I think is important. But like I said, I just want to see if I could do it.
What are some of the specific things that they did that were honorable or?
Oh, I don't know. It's just whatever you read about in citations, what they did, you know, ran through this, grabbed the guy, saved his life, stuff like that. I mean, right now it's kind of, if the life I got now, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life, just sit around and, you know, go to school and that kind of stuff and do paper. I'd rather do something that's a little more important. Not important, I wouldn't say important, I just think it's a little more, from my point of view, right now at 15 it seems adventurous, if you could put it that way. And I want to see what it's like. I don't know if adventure is the right word, that's kind of, you know, Hollywood, but I want to see what it's like. Also, like, a big part of it is, do I think that serve this country, that's a big part of it, that's the main thing.
Well, some men that we've interviewed said that it was an adventure, and that it also was service, so, I mean, they have some of the same feelings. Okay, now let me ask you some questions about people your age. Why should they be interested in this event or TAD or the war or anything you want to focus in on? The importance here is not so much what happened so much as why they should be interested in what happened.
Well, I mean, the people I go to school with, those kind of people.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody, they really don't care about it. And you can't blame most kids really don't give a care about this kind of stuff. But I think as far as they should know, like in TED, for example, we won that battle. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Military, we just killed them. And then the press made it seem like we lost, and that was President Johnson's resignation was a part of that. I mean, American lost faith in what the government said. From then on, it was downhill till 75. That's my view. And I think that people my age should know that the press is not infallible. They're not a bunch of gods going around saying that everything they say is just the gospel. And they make mistakes, too. And also, from Vietnam, totally, they should learn that. Like, this country, I think, got a real emotional, I guess you could say, scar from that. And I think, I mean, we kind of got a defeatist attitude. I mean, even in Korea, when we just got us treated, we didn't lose, but we didn't exactly win. I think it hurts this country. I mean, like I said, defeatist attitude. That's part of it.
Well, how does this defeatist attitude show up?
Well, I think mostly, how does it, well, it show up? I really don't, I couldn't say that exactly. But I think part of the defeatist attitude is why we lost Vietnam. People were not willing to give out their all to press anything forward. I saw this Army chaplain who was in Vietnam. He said, next time you send us to war, make sure you're going to win or don't send us at all, something like that, and I think that's right. You can't send out guys and, you know, sacrifice their lives and just screw around for 5 years and not get anything done. You got to be willing to press it forward or don't get involved at all.
Okay. Are there any other lessons that people your age should, you know, whether they want to learn them or not, that they ought to,
well, I guess ought to learn. I guess there's a lesson about the communists mostly. During the war, they acted like it was just like it was Democrat, Republican, and the communists were just a different party, and that we had no right to go around and push them around, and because they're just because they're a communist, And when the war ended, Joe Biden just wrote that letter, you know, stop the North Vietnamese butchery, whatever it was. They're basically a pretty atrocious form of government. And I don't think those people really real. I don't think our country realizes just exactly what they mean. Like you could say, for example, when what was that country Russia invaded back in '68, Czechoslovakia, and they invaded that. And that was nobody remembers that now because they did it real fast. We screwed around in Vietnam for a long time, and just got nothing out of it.
I missed the point you made about Joan Baez. Could you kind of go back on that?
What did I say?
You said something about Joan Baez wrote a letter.
Oh, yeah. She, during the war, she was a big anti-war protester. You know, we were immoral and cruel to the South Vietnamese people and so on. We should stop the bombing. And then just like last month, she wrote a letter, she wrote an open letter in a newspaper, which a bunch of people signed, some other anti-war people, saying that the North Vietnamese were, you know, cruel and stuff like that, saying exactly the same stuff she said about America. You just think, you know, you dumb idiot, why didn't you just realize that? I mean, now you just, people like you screwed it up. That's what I think.
Because of the, what was the occasion for her letter?
The occasion?
Yeah, what was the event that she was responding to?
I don't know, I think it was just the last, 4 years since the communist takeover, like in Cambodia especially, where they've been killing those people. I don't know the extent of it exactly, but I know there've been, I guess you'd say massacres. I don't know about the exact extent.
But also because of something that's been in the news lately.
What, you mean the China invasion of Vietnam?
Well, the boat people, right?
Oh, yeah, I've been thinking about them, yeah. That's part
What about the boat people? Does that say anything to you?
Well, right off, I think, just thinking about it, you know, emotionally, I think we should take these people in because we were once their allies and we, in a sense, deserted them. But then I also don't know if I want all these people in our country. I mean, there's so many of them. But I think we should help them in some way because we were their allies and we just, I think through Congress, we just left them on their own. But I guess then I kind of say they should have defended their own country. They should have done something rather than to get beaten. But that's hard to say, though. Because I know they fought well, despite what a lot of people wrote. And I guess if we had given South Vietnam the same kind of support that China and Russia gave North Vietnam, they probably would have won. I can't really put my emotions real strong on that subject. Haven't got them all sorted out.
Well, it's clear that it's not nice to put people out in boats that are going to sink.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Now, the final question I had, and maybe we may go back to something else, but your parents have been particularly supportive.
Oh, my dad is, yeah.
In your research, why mm-hmm. don't you, can you say something about that?
Well, when I first started, I really had no idea of, you know, who to contact and so on. And my dad, wrote that doctorate on some Marine Corps aspect of history. And so he gave me some help in, you know, where to write to and stuff like that. That was a hope. And, you know, driven me around like this. I couldn't do it without it.
Okay. How about the trip up to Kansas City? That's kind of unusual, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you say something about it? How did it come up, or how did you get the... You know, how'd you identify you wanted to go up there, and then how'd you get the parents to fork over the money?
What I did was, I contacted, there was two guys who were up there. One guy contacted me through Leatherneck magazine and invited me to come up. He didn't know my age, Joe, so I just told my age in a letter, and he said, we'll come up anyway. So that, I thought that would make a difference, but it didn't.
Could I stop you there?
Sure.
Could you describe the Leatherneck announcement that you put
in? I just put an announcement in there that I was interested in contacting vets who were in Khe Sanh and the Tet Offensive. And I also said I'd be interested to hear from guys who were in the fall of Saigon, because I've got a little interest in that, too. And so I guess in the past month, after it came out in May 79, March. And since then, I got a couple phone calls, some letters and such. I've been getting a lot of help. And so, one guy, the recon marine, contacted me through that and invited me down. And the sergeant major contacted me because I wrote him a letter. And I went this summer because the sergeant major got transferred to Okinawa last week, so I had to come pretty fast. And it was a birthday present that my parents gave me to bus ticket down there.
Where did you stay down there?
Oh, my aunt's house. She lives down there.
And Just describe a little bit how you went out, interviewed them, and all that.
Well, what I did is the sergeant major at Way City, I contacted him as he's a recruiter up at at Kansas City, Missouri. So I just went to his office, and he's got his own office. You know, the sergeant major's pretty big dog up there. So I talked to him. I think I was there for 4 hours just rambling on with him about the different things. And I had pretty much, I knew what I wanted to ask him. See, I'm trying to put a book together, and you're going into, I think, more of, you know, thinking back about it. But I was asking him specifically, you know, what were you doing at this time and what happened here and so on. And he told me about, he was the guy who lowered the flag and raised the American flag at, I think, the Thuathien province capital. Can't pronounce that right. And so I talked to him about that. And I talked to him about his company commander. He got hit in the leg by mortar, and he was the one who dragged him off and got a corpsman for him. Talked to him about that. I just talked to him about his experiences at the battle. And the next guy I talked to the next day...
Well, let me ask you about the sergeant major. What do you think about somebody like you coming up and asking him all these questions?
Well...
What's his reaction?
Well, when I first started, I kind of felt guilty, like, prying into these people's personal thing. I mean, some things, they might have some good memories, but some things really probably hurt them. But when he called me up, though, and said, he said, why are you doing this? And I said, well, I don't think you've been given enough credit. And he said, thanks a lot, you know, see if you can come down. So that gave me a lot of support, because he was pretty receptive. And, well, I don't know, admittedly, I was pretty nervous when I first talked to him, because it was the first guy I ever talked to face-to-face. I really didn't know what to say. But it went okay. And then he gave me, he's got about piles of newspaper scraps he saved back from 68. He's there, actually, those off for me, about 40 pages worth. I got some stuff on a tape and that sort of thing. So it was pretty worthwhile.
Okay, now, what was the second interview?
The second guy was a recon marine that I mentioned. He was in Vietnam from 69 to 70. He wasn't involved in any of the actions I'm interested in, but I just wanted to talk to him about his views about the different things that happened. And, well, he's like...
Where did you go to see him?
At his house.
How did that... Give me a little bit of detail.
Like I said, he contacted me through Leatherneck magazine and he invited me down. So when I was at my aunt's house, I just called him up, and he was a pretty nice guy too. He just said, come on down after I get home from work. He's a police officer right now. And he invited me down to his house after work. And I talked to him for about 4 hours too. And he took me down to the police station when that was over. And they got a collection of guns they brought over from the war. They got two M16s, an M14, AK-47, and an SKS. Which was pretty interesting because I never seen one ever really close up and held it. So that was nice. And what else? I just talked to him. Like I said, I went through his scrapbooks and saw different things. And he's got quite a memory, though. I mean, he remembers the dates and the units and the times and names and such. And, well, he was a corporal. And he's had pretty much, I think he got wounded 3 times. But it was not serious, so he didn't want it, and he didn't accept his Purple Hearts, so he didn't have any of those. Then he has this pretty cool thing. It's a plaque he made for himself of all his medals. That's pretty sharp. Said he wanted to put it on a camouflage green, but his wife wouldn't stand for it. And you can tell, like, he's pretty proud. He's got a Marine Corps belt buckle, Marine Corps type, and that kind of thing. You can tell these people, they're glad they did it. Or they're glad they, you know, put it out. And like I said, he lent me a couple books about Vietnam that he had. He's been keeping up pretty much, you know, reading news articles, things like that.
What books did he have that were news to you?
He had one called, it's out of print now, it's by a Marine who was a caisson. It's called Vietnam as I Lived It. It's about, he was in an 1-9 over caisson. You might want to read it though, because it's got a lot of personal experiences about the siege and Operation Pegasus.
Who's the author?
Lance Larson.
That's new information to me. L-A-R-S-O-N?
S-O-N, right.
Who published it, do you know?
I got it written down in my house, and I can send you that later on.
I'd be very interested.
I haven't got the top.
Yeah.
It's out of print now, though, but you can probably write the guy or something like that to find out. And he gave me one book called, it's a big photographic book called The Vietnam War, I think. It just came out. It's a photography.
Have you seen the David Douglas Duncan collection of photographs?
War Without Heroes? Yeah, I've seen that. I wrote him a letter about a year ago, but he never answered.
Yeah, he's pretty much incognito.
Yeah.
Well, incommunicado, that's what I want to say.
But he got a book called, have you seen I Protest?
I haven't. Do you have any comments on I Protest?
No, I haven't seen it. The recon marine has a copy, he has to dig it up, he's gonna mail it to me. But I haven't seen it yet. I heard, though, that he's pretty critical of a lot of the aspects. I don't really know. Like, there's one thing he's, David Douglas Duncan, he wrote about Way City. He said, first off, there was no tactical value about it, and it wasn't worth capturing. And I can only say that, from what Braystrup said, it was tactically valuable. And you cannot let a bunch of the enemies sit around in a town for the rest of the war. There's no choice but to get them. I just got that out of Life magazine, though I don't know exactly what context it was in.
The colonel he interviewed was very irritated at that book, I protest.
Really? You remember his name?
Colonel Wilkinson.
Don't remember.
Excuse me?
I don't remember that guy.
He was the basically responsible for the perimeter defense at the base. ISM base.
Was he with
I forgot what designation.
226.
226?
3.
3, that's what I thought, yeah. I wrote about him. I don't know him, though. I haven't contacted him.
Well, we've interviewed him. At some point, I'll send you a Xerox of the transcripts.
That'd be great.
Of all this stuff. Yeah. This is the one way I can pay you to share the information.
No, this is fun for me.
Well, it's fun for me, too.
It's good. Yeah. I mean, it's the first time I've ever been able to really talk about it at this extent.
Let me ask you, actually, I've covered most of the questions that I've had in mind. Let me just throw one at you. If you were to, if you were to tell me which was the most impressive photograph in Duncan's photo essay, which would it be? You know, dealing with Kaysen.
What? Oh, yeah, that's it. But it reminded me of that sniper's up on that hill. Shows those three guys, one's holding a rifle like this, and the other one's got the binoculars, and the guy's pointing. I thought that was pretty impressive.
What's going on there, and why was that impressive?
Well, I think it's probably posed or the way the guys are acting, but... What? I really think it is. It has to be.
But why was it impressive to you? I mean, there are many, many photographs there, and why that one?
I just think it's basically, for a 15-year-old, it looks pretty cool, you know. I think it looked sharp and...
Cut a bit
off. All right, shut up. All right, basically, that's about it. I think it looked pretty neat. But that's...
Well, what was it that looked... I mean...
From a 15-year-old's point of view, that's really neat.
Well, what was neat?
I don't know. They just seemed like they looked like Marines. And see, most of the pictures... I don't think that's a very good picture of life at Kaysen, because he had some good pictures of guys, you know, jumping in trenches and stuff. There was one, it might have been from Khan Tien, I don't know which, but it showed a guy running real fast towards a trench. I thought that was pretty descriptive. That was pretty good.
Why was that impressive?
I don't know, it seemed like most photographers, they just take pictures of guys, you know, sitting around talking, but this guy was actually there with the people getting shot at, and I thought that was, he showed what was going on.
Well, do you know anything about Duncan's past, why he would
That he was a Marine officer in World War II, and he covered the Chosin Reservoir in Korea. I think he's a lieutenant colonel now in the reserves. So he's got some interest. Like you said in his book, that he's got a lot of interest in the Marine Corps. That's part of it.
Okay, any other photographs in that collection that struck you as particularly memorable?
Well, there was one. It was a two-page shot of those guys passing up ammo that could have exploded any minute. I thought that was pretty descriptive thing of some of the bravery they showed.
Do you remember the day? Could you describe a little bit, as you understand, what was happening that day and then the picture
I haven't got that clear. I think it might have been the day the ammo thing blew up, but I'm not sure. Is that it? And I just seemed like in Stubby's book, he wrote a lot about the guys running around and picking up shells they could just blow up and trying to get rid of them before anyone else got hurt. And that takes pretty much guts. I don't think I would have done it. And I think that's pretty descriptive of some of the bravery. I think in case Sandoz, if you weren't on the perimeter getting shot at by the NBA, I think most of the bravery was doing things like that. Or, you know, pulling guys out of fire and things like that.
Did you, okay, was this sort of bravery reported at all?
I don't think so, not clearly. I think there were some notes, you know, about how the Marines were doing some brave stuff. But I think most of it concentrated on how many shells were falling on them and all the casualties and things like that. And I think they blew it out of proportion. Like, I think there was one thing that person I mentioned who made those kind of biting comments about the Marines being ignorant. He also, the editor put in, since this report has come in, the weather has deteriorated and so has the Marines' position and things like that. I mean, they make it seem like the Marines are just crumbling all over themselves and didn't know what to do. When in fact, I think they were just doing a pretty sharp job. When you think about it, like, I think that Captain Shore, in that book he wrote for the Marine Corps, he said that you could also say that the Marines besieged the NBA. They had like a couple divisions down there. I think, I don't know if anybody would agree with that, but I think technically that's true. I don't think you can, I don't know if you can convince somebody who was there that, you know, you were besieging somebody else, but I think, like I said, technically that's what happened, because the NBA really made no gains except for the press, which really blew it up.
Oh, yeah, right. Mitch reminds me. We've asked everybody.
Oh, the movies?
About this, and let me go at it one at a time. Just general reaction. Have you seen The Boys and
yeah, I
Company
saw
Six?
That.
Do you have any reaction to that?
Well, personally, I thought it was a piece of trash. Frankly, I mean, it was just unbelievable. And I talked to that recon Marine, and I mentioned that. He just kind of laughed and said that was the most ridiculous thing he's ever seen. And he said his friend was a Marine, and his friend's friend was a Special Forces guy who was the technical advisor on that movie. He says they showed that, they said if you showed his face in that part of the county, they'll cut it off. So it's just the biggest joke he's ever seen.
What was there about the movie that you found repulsive?
Well, first off, they made the big thing about the race thing. The black guy was the hero of the movie. I mean, which is, that was just done to, for a little bit of excitement or sensationalism, I guess you could say. It was, you know, he was the one who made the stripe. He was the one who, like, led the company when the company commander screwed off, couldn't know what he was doing. Then they had, I mean, they go to that army base, and you know, that thing was supposed to be, like, early 68 or late 67. They go to that army base, and here's these guys, totally spaced out of their mind, you know. Which, I mean, even back when the drugs still started to get going, like in 71, it was nowhere near that bad. I mean, then they got a couple fraggings right off, of course. They blow that general up with a Claymore mine, which is pretty ridiculous. Then they had that thing that really got me when they're playing a soccer game, and those VC terrorists start throwing those bombs around. And you see the South Vietnamese general and this Special Forces guy grab people to cover themselves, and they run off. And the company commander runs for a bunker to save his own skin and stuff like that.
I swear that movie was made in Hanoi.
We just saw it over our home box office. It was the most disgusting.
Oh, he had to see it, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not a big movie guy. He had to see it, so I drove him all the way across town. I'm going to see it. And it started out, it started out, you know, boot camp, and oh, that's pretty good. But then they got into these things. It's just, you know, the officers, the leaders were just nincompoops. Everybody were really capitalist at heart, using children to protect them. Oh, it didn't even make sense.
Like that boot camp thing, the recon Marine said, as far as the boot camp went, it was pretty realistic, except that they talked back more than they really did in real life. But he liked that part. But he says, like my dad said, once they got to Vietnam, it went downhill.
Yeah, I thought it was just atrocious. It was so, like, unfortunately, like, so much propaganda. Oh. It was so extreme that it was a parody of itself.
I remember I was reading some one review said it was the best thing you'd ever seen in Vietnam. And I thought that was a joke and a half.
You know, I was just thinking, I don't know, and I'm sure, Pete, you're probably familiar with this, maybe you're not. I can vaguely remember, since you're doing this case on that, I can vaguely remember there was something about during the siege itself, that as the siege began to progress, the President Johnson got in writing.
The Joint Chief of Staff.
Something, I didn't know if you're familiar with that. I thought you may be. But I thought that was kind of interesting that they had to guarantee there wouldn't be a military debacle there for this, which shows, again, to me, the political aspect of this, the whole thing, and putting people's lives and bravery on the line for political.
Did you read that book by Mike Kerr, Dispatches? Did you read that part about when the president made him sign that paper? Yeah. I thought it was disgusting.
We videotaped that letter on Friday.
Oh.
We actually saw the letter.
Oh, you really? Hey, can you drop that off for me? Okay.
It's signed by General Wheeler, by Earl Wheeler, for the Joint Chiefs, guaranteeing.
That's unbelievable, really.
Defense. Now, okay, let's go on. Now, how about Coming Home?
Coming Home, I wouldn't go see that. That's Jane Fonda flick. From what I've heard about it, though, it's pretty biased, I think. I saw some film clips of it on TV, and they had one scene with have you seen that? Okay, they had that scene where the Marine captain comes in, I think he's in Hawaii, and he comes in and talks about how brutal those guys were, and so on, you know, how they cut heads off and things like that. I said, undoubtedly that happened sometime in the war, but more often it was the VC who were running around cutting people's heads off and so on. And they never, from what I heard about, they never really made any point about this. Then they had that thing where John Boyd was that guy in the wheelchair, the crippled hero or whatever he was, and he was supposed to be pretty anti-war from what I heard, because I didn't see it exactly. And I think I saw some of these guys on TV, some of these people in VA hospitals, and every one of them that I saw taped said that they were proud of what they did and they thought they did a good job. Then you got John Boyd wheeling around pretending, you know, it was a terrible thing that happened. Which I think was just, if they're going to make a movie, they should at least show both sides or something. But I can't talk real accurately about it because I haven't seen it. I just saw film clips of it.
Okay.